WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. If you were listening to soul radio in the 70s, you'll remember that. The main ingredient, Rolling Down a Mountainside on RCA, got to number 7 on the R&B charts, 92 on the pop charts. That was July of 75 on Soul Train Chicago that Leroy Phillips strolled onto the set with a backpack loaded with the main ingredient's latest album, Rolling Down a Mountainside, which he presented to the host Clinton Gint. Yeah, made Billboard. I think I've still got the picture. And Leroy called us last week, and immediately John and I both glommed onto him and said, "You got to be a Monday night guest." And he agreed. So, Leroy, thanks for joining us.
Yes.
I appreciate it. Yeah, as I say, I remember well that picture of you on Soul Train giving out that Main Ingredient album. But I want to go back a lot further than that, all the way back to the first time I'd heard of you, I think, was you were promoting, I think you were with Kent, and it was like 1962, and one of their labels was Beltone, and you were promoting a Jive 5 record. Was that you?
That's history.
Well, it was. And, of course, Kent, they had started in 62. And what were there, like 3 employees beside the owners, and you were one of them?
Yeah, Richard Stearns, the disc jockey from WGES.
Right.
Him and a guy named Bert Loeb convinced Bill Berman. Bill Berman was a magnate in the hardware business.
Uh-huh.
And they convinced him that he should go into the record distribution because Richard was very popular and that he would play the records and he would have no trouble getting labels. Well, it wasn't that easy, but they had convinced Bill Berman that it was that easy until he found out that it wasn't. But the Jive 5, My True Love, yeah, that was one of the first records that I promoted back in the day.
Yeah, it was a great, great record. And I remember then you worked hard as heck on Hully Gully Time, and that didn't make it. But 31 labels, and I guess Bert had been at M&S before that, distributors?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what were some of the other labels that Kent was distributing?
We didn't have but 2 or 3. The Beltone,
yeah.
The Jive 5, Bobby Turner, Tossin' and Turning, and they had a couple of little local labels. I can't mm-hmm. remember the name of them because we didn't have but a couple of hits. Oh, we had a record by, I Got a Crick in My Ear. What was the guy's name? He was on that same label. I think he was on Beltone.
Okay.
Not Beltone. He was on, there was a Jive 5 and Bobby, Tossing and Turning.
Right, Bobby Lewis.
Yeah, and this guy's name is eluding me,
okay.
But he had a record out. I Can't Hear You, I Got a Crick in My Ear.
I've never heard it.
Bobby Goldsberry.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. Now.
And we didn't have many more known labels.
Oh,
I mean,
great.
They were so, you know, unknown. We never did get a chance to get the major ones that they had hoped to get.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew they were doing some interviews with Bill Berman, and he was bragging about his 31 record labels, and I thought to myself, other than Beltone, I don't know if I can name any off the top of my head, so I take...
Well, don't feel bad. I worked, and I can't name any of them either.
That's funny. Now, did you go from there to United?
Yeah. No, I went to... he got me a job at United Richard Stamp,
yeah.
Which used to work for WGES Radio, which was later on became WZON, which was located over at 2812 West Washington Boulevard,
yeah.
In this house. And he used to broker time, but he did so well that the station was owned by a guy named Dr. Dyer.
Uh-huh.
That Doc Dyer hired him and gave him a full-time position. Well, he was getting broken time from Al Benson. Now, Al Benson was the Lena's uncle.
Oh.
and how they got into the business was, is that there were no black distributors, and he told the record company that if you want me to play your record, you've got to let my nephew distribute it. So that's how United Record Distributors came into existence.
Oh, that's great.
Ernie and George Lehner, and later on the two sons, Billy and Tony Lehner.
Yeah, and they had labels as well, like Wonderful. They had some great stuff.
Yeah. Now, George ran that part of the business. He opened a Wonderful record, which was on the second floor of a United Distributors. That's where Michael Jackson recorded the Jackson 5 recorded their first record upstairs in George's studio, because E. Rodney Jones and Purvis Pan was managing them, and they brought them down there to George and told George that we got these young kids that you really need to sign. And George says, well, nah, that little kid is a novelty. His voice gonna change, and my first decision is my last decision, so I'm going to take a pass. So then Gordon T. signed them to Steeltown Records, and they had a record I called I'm a Big Boy Now. And they recorded it down there at 1827 Michigan up at George Lehner's studio.
Well, the Lehners weren't the first people, of course, to pass on the Jackson 5. Didn't Curtis Mayfield also say, well, I got five stair steps?
Oh, yeah. Five companies passed on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Warner Brothers, I think, Atlantic, Columbia, a lot of the majors passed on them.
And then Bobby Taylor kind of championed their cause.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I think I'll tell you a story. It's very funny. They were opening act for Bobby and the Coopers, Marshall and the Shylights, and I don't know if the Temptations or some other major group was on there. And then they were upstairs in the dressing room, and they heard all these noise down there. So Bobby Taylor said, what in the world is going on down there? And then Marshall told him, well, man, that's them little kids from Gary, Indiana down there. So he said, well, I got to go down here and hear these kids. So he went down there, and they blew him away. And he got on the phone and called Barry Gordy. And Barry said, nah, same situation. Nah, I don't want to be bothered. You know, his voice going to change. And got to have a chaperone for the kids that's that young. And nah, thank you. So Bobby said, Barry, before you say no, at least listen. And Barry Gordy listened to them. And, like I say, as the rest, he then bought the contract from Steeltown for $25,000,
yeah,
from Gordon Key. And then, like I say, the rest is history. Now, Diana Ross, a lot of people think Diana Ross discovered the Jackson 5.
Not a chance.
Bobby Taylor discovered them. Now, how Diana Ross came into the picture was, is that back in those days, what Diana wanted, Diana got. And if you wanted to book Diana Ross, they say, yeah, you can have her, but you've got to piggyback to your kids, and we're trying to get up off the... Yeah, right. Send them on. I don't care, but we really want Diana Ross.
Right.
So she got to play the London Palladium and the Ed Sullivan Show and, you know, New York Madison Square Garden and all those kind of places. And they piggybacked on Diana Ross's back, and that's how they began to, you know, get famous. Now, she did help Kelter put them into stardom, but she was a long way from discovering them.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's interesting you mentioned Al Benson, and I should have put that together because I remember he was Arthur Lehner, and he was doing that Sunday night preaching and teaching gospel show. And I guess GES wouldn't let him sell time on a religious show, he became Al Benson and said, okay, it's secular. And I should have put that together.
His real name was Abbott Lehner.
Right, yeah.
And then he changed the name to Abbott Lehner Benson.
Yeah, and Al Benson, of course, everyone knew Al Benson. So, United was such a big deal and for so long, and they had so many, many labels as far as that goes. And I think that... that I had a picture of you somewhere. You went to Nashville. It was like Excello Records and all. They were opening Woodland Sound Studios and had a big soiree. And you were there. That would have been 68. Do you remember going?
Yeah. The funny story about that is they all got us tickets to go to the Grand Ole Opry. And we were like, you know, the Grand Ole Opry is like gold to get tickets to the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah.
They line up early in the morning to late at night to get in the Grand Ole Opry. But Excello had bought about 10 or 20 tickets, so any of the guys who wanted to go could go. And we were going first to go to make fun. And we were down in the front row, and we were hollering and screaming and yahoo and yahoo. And the guy said, they got front row seats, and they enjoying themselves beside it.
You know?
So that just made us start yelling more. You know, but I enjoyed myself.
Well, I know that the Avons performed on WLAC in one of those events. Because in fact, I'm going to play an Avons records because I know you promoted it. That was on Excello, and that was just a great little sound. But there were so many United labels that, and you and Abner worked there probably long before you. But
yeah,
weren't there many other luminaries who walked through United over the years?
Oh, yeah. The Miracles used to come down when they was in town.
Yeah.
Bobby Taylor, when he was in town, Ed Townsend. I was just trying to remember some of the ones.
Oh, yeah.
Telly Lacanis, when he was in town, they would come down there.
Aaron Neville.
To the distributorship.
Yeah, Aaron Neville. Mm-hmm.
But I have a story. One of my best members of United and RCA, the record that I think about mostly was the record called Oh Happy Day.
Oh, sure, Edwin Hawkins.
They had, they were from a church choir in Northern California. They had no idea about what was going on. All they knew is that they would go to the convocation every year. And then when they go to the convocation, everybody would have an album but them. And they say, when we come back next year, we're going to have us an album. So they start selling dinners and flavor and whatever they could to raise money so that they could record an album. Now, the after they recorded the album, one of the guys took it to one of the radio stations in Oakland. And then the janitor, who at night he would put some music on to, I guess make him pass the night away. And then he told the program director next day, I heard this record by a group called Southern California, Northern California. They weren't even Edward Hawkins singers then.
Right.
They've called Let Us Go Into the House of the Lord. But somebody suggested that they turn it over and play the record, Oh Happy Day. Now, their manager, a little gopher, was a guy named Lamont Betts.
Uh-huh.
And Lamont called me, and he had sent me a couple of copies and said, Mr. Phillips, we were told that if anybody could get us and play in the Chicagoland area, that it would be you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got this record that we just recorded. I said, well, send me a couple of copies, and we'll see. But at that time, I'm thinking, if you hear one choir, you've heard them all. So he called me back and said, did you get a chance to listen to my record? So I told my secretary, I said, well, get that record to that guy sent us in California. And she got it. I put the record on. It just blew me away. So I got up out of my seat, and when there was used to be a gospel DJ named Bob Weaver out of WBEE Radio in Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
I got up and went out to WBEE in Harvey, and he was the first one in the city to play that record. And when I got back, they said, Bob, we've been calling you all morning long. Says the phone ain't quit ringing since he put that record on. So then in Chicago, Bob Weaver, then the next morning, I went over to WDON and Bill Doc Lee put it on. So I called Lamont back and said, well, send me a box of samples. Because from what I get, I think you got a hit on your hand.
Yeah.
Now, how they came to become the Edwin Hawkins singer, they had no idea, like I said, about business. And every time somebody would call to make them an offer, they would call me and want to know what's this. They had no idea about publishing, none of that stuff. They was when you say green, they were green. They, Lamont called and wanted to know who was this and who was that. And, who was Neil Bogie or Bogart? You meant Neil Bogart? He said, yes. Yeah. So Mr. Bogart, want, to lease our record, and he wanted to give us $25,000 and 15 points. Now, exactly what is that?
All right.
So I explained to him what the deal was.
I'm going to leave it
now.
I'm going
to
leave
I
it.
I went from here to Cincinnati to get the record played, and again, it exploded there. Now, job beginning to come in, and the
okay. Let
the,
me let
the
me
pastor of the church.
Let me interrupt you here because I gotta do something. But we will pick it up right there. No, it's not the 45 version of Oh Happy Day, but it is a live version of what became the Edwin Hawkins Singers in Church singing it. And it's WGN Radio, and we are talking with Leroy Phillips, who was on the scene for that record and a big reason it managed to become such a huge hit in the Midwest, though unstoppable it was. And so we left Leroy just coming out of Cincinnati, where it tore up WCIN, I'm sure, so we'll pick it up there.
Right. Then the job starts coming in. So now, when the job starts coming in, the pastor of the church says, well, they knew about the $25,000 they had gotten, that Edwin had gotten. So they says, well, no, that money belongs to the church. And then Dorothy Morrison's husband said, no, Dorothy Morrison was the lead singer, the record never would have been a hit if she hadn't have sung. So my choir ain't going nowhere. Dorothy Morrison's husband said, well, she's not going nowhere. She didn't get any of the money.
Right.
So Edwin says, okay. What happened is he stood up in choir and says, we've got a lot of jobs coming in. And Reverend whatever his name is said, you all can't go with us. And Dorothy Morrison's husband said, you can't go with us. So I'm going to start the Edwin Hawkins Singers. How many of you all want to come with me? And half the choir raised their hand. And that's how the Edwin Hawkins Singers came into existence.
That's a
and
great story. Yeah, I heard on one interview with Edwin Hawkins that he said one of his influences was Sergio Mendez, and I always always liked hearing that. But yeah, I heard Dorothy Morrison claim she had been influenced by James Brown. But what a great record! And you know, I think the only other time they charted, and I don't even know if they got credit for it, was they backed up Melanie on a record, Melanie Safka, and I'm trying to think of which record it was.
Right.
Yeah, Lay Down Candles in the Rain, I think. But yeah, that's a great story. Now, you left, in fact, I was going to play a couple other things like a William Devon, because I know you went to RCA and at Magic.
But I was just going to tell you about how that came about. This is so strange. That record we had put in the Goodwill box. After it slipped on the shelf for so long in the sample room, to clear the shelf off, we take them and put them in the Goodwill box. Now, a guy in Milwaukee named Dr. Bob.
Oh, I loved him.
At WAWA Radio.
He was the best.
He called me. He said, a smash on your hand. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, what's this? He says, be thankful for what you got by William DeBar.
Yeah.
So I asked my secretary again. I said, look and see if we can find that record. And she looked in the Goodwill box, and there it was. So then I listened to it. It sounded a whole lot like Curtis Mayfield. So then people was buying the record in Milwaukee and paying for it because they was in short supply. So when Purvis Pan was the first one to play it here, and when I got back home, my wife said, Purvis been all night long about some record that you left over there tonight. Something be thankful for to God or something. I said, yeah, okay, I'll call him. So I called him, and he says, man, this phone ain't stopped ringing since I dropped the needle on that record. Now, we sold 65,000 copies of that record here in 1 week. After fans, Purvis was the first one to play it, and then he got better deal in to play it full time. And like I say, it just blew up. And as always, say the rest is history.
And I know at Magic 75, that RCA convention in New Orleans, they gave you an award for breaking it. They said you're responsible for that hit.
No, you look for the history. Yeah, you're right. Another one that I enjoy was the Evan and Champagne King.
Oh, yeah.
Same.
Yep.
Now, they recorded her when she was 16. They released the record when she was 17. It became a gold record when she was 18.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what she got the name Champagne from is that her family said when she was a baby, she used to always have little spit bubbles. So that's why they got the idea of champagne, because champagne is always bubbly.
Sure.
So that's where they got the name Evelyn Champagne King.
Now, you did another thing that didn't hit, but it was a great little Chicago record, and I'm going to play that next. We're talking, by the way, to Leroy Phillips. If you have any Chicago memories, we'd love to hear them. 888-876-5593, 888-ROLLYE. I love Dr. Bob from Wawa. I got to ask Leroy if he was wearing the stethoscope when he'd come to call on him. Anyway, I will mention, and it's probably important I do, that if you don't get through, dial again. We're not 100% sure what's going on with the phones, but we know something is, but one out of every fifth caller gets a disconnect notice or something. So if it doesn't answer, you get the wrong message, just dial it again. 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh on WGN Radio.
I stopped
WGN Radio. Well, you're hardcore if you remember that. That's 21st Century Remember the Rain, 1975 on RCA. Got to number 69 on the R&B charts. No pop play. They had one other release, Child, that got to number 71, and then that was it for that group. But I'll tell you what, they would have never been on RCA if it weren't for Leroy. Leroy Phillips, we are talking to him. Why did they not hit?
I don't know. They had, after a couple of hits, they just still go away. Now, how they got to RCA was they was on a local label, and they were managed by a guy named Dr. Sykes. And it began to make some noise here in Chicago. So I called Brother Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of the guy's name who was the manager of the vice president of promotion, and was telling him about this record. These kids, a friend of mine was the managing of, and that you should hear them. And so I sent it to them, and right away he said, "Yeah, we want it." So then they had me to go pick up the master from Dr. Sykes, and then fly it down to the prison plant in Indianapolis. And like I say, the rest, they did, that one did pretty good, and then they had one other one. And after that, I don't know, you know, they just went a different way. I don't know what happened. They just fizzled out of sight.
Yeah, I know Gordy signed them, but I don't remember anything ever coming of that other than...
No, it didn't. Yeah. No, they didn't.
And then I read where Alfonso Smith, who was in the group, died last year. So sad to see about that. But I looked all through his obits and stuff and never saw any other musical stuff. So I guess that was it.
Yeah, they found them kids. They were living in the projects over at Henry Horner over on Lake Street between Ashland and Damon or Ashland and Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
In Weston, there were some projects over there. That's where they lived, at, over in that area.
Yeah. All right, somebody wants to talk to you. Kirkland from Flossmoor, welcome to WGN Radio.
Oh, good evening. Leroy was one of my mentors in the business.
That's great.
And you were talking about Dr. Bob.
Yeah.
That was going to relate a little story. The first time I met him, I was doing promotion with a reliable promotion, Bill Lashley's company,
mm-hmm.
and he sent me to Milwaukee to see Dr. Bop. I was working a Jeffrey Stoner record. It was a cover of a Curtis Mayfield song. So he told me to call when I got into Milwaukee, and Bop would direct me to the station. And that was in the days when the stations weren't downtown. So I had to drive out near the outskirts of Milwaukee.
Right.
He said, look for the tower and just drive to the tower.
Yeah.
And the station was back behind a restaurant that was owned by a former Green Bay Packer.
Yeah.
The restaurant was called the Left Guard. And he said, as soon as you pass the sign that says the Left Guard, he said, make a real sharp right. He said, it won't look like a road because it isn't.
Yeah.
He said, just drive. You'll come to a bridge. He said, don't worry. The bridge will hold the car.
Cross over the bridge.
But when I got to it and saw the bridge, I didn't trust it. I walked over it.
Oh, that's
true. And I get to the station. The engineer opens the door, and I told him I was there to see Dr. Bob, so he takes me over to the control room. Bob's on the air. He's sitting up in the control room with a doctor's coat on.
Yep. And the stethoscope.
He had the reflector on his head and a stethoscope.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first thought that hit me was, he does realize he's on the radio.
That's one of my favorite lines. I have read that, Kirkland, so many times, and I laugh every time I hear it. But that was Willie Davis's station. It was West Allis, yeah.
Right. No, not then. Willie bought it much later. After that. That was when it was WAWA, and they were AM and FM. It was weird. They were AM in the morning, and then in the evening, they shifted to FM.
Right.
They were probably the first R&B station that was on FM.
But they were so good. I mean, I know that the Chess Brothers had NOV and all that, but Dr. Bop, and I later found out how old he was. This was no youngster.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was...
His real name was Hoyt...
I'm
trying to think of his last name. It was Hoyt something.
Yeah.
And the station, that's the station O.C. White was on.
Right, exactly. And yeah, Hoyt came from Columbus. And like I say, even O.C. White was young compared to Hoyt. And,
right.
It was Hoyt Locke, I think, was his last name.
That's it, right.
Yeah, but he was so good. And that line about, yeah, you do know you're on the radio, it's just classic. He always was, like, in costume.
But yeah, I learned so much from Leroy. I can't thank him enough.
Wow! So where did you guys work together?
Well, we were contemporary. I was working for Warner Brothers.
Ah.
I was at Warner Brothers 25 years. I started Three Bagging. I was with the distributor, Warner, Elektra, Atlantic. I handled all three labels.
Yeah.
And then when Warner Brothers started getting so much of R&B product, they said you had to make a decision to go with one or the other.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah.
And at the time, it was when you went to Atlantic's meetings, you went to New York.
Yeah.
When you went to Warner Brothers meetings, you went out to Burbank, California. All the movie stars on the lot and everything, so it wasn't a hard choice.
Right, easy decision. Yeah, I can see that. I'm so glad you called. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. So do you remember Kirkland, Leroy?
Oh, we talk every day.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's not but a few of us left, and he's one of the ones that I talked to. He has a wealth of knowledge about the business.
Yeah.
Him and I talked to Emmett Garner, who used to promote Al Green. And I talked to a couple of my DJ friends, Jim Rags and a couple of the others that's still around. But it's not a whole lot of us.
No, so many are gone.
They're still left.
Seems like every year we lose more.
Yeah, when I went to RC, I went there as a salesman, but I didn't have anything to sell. So the reason for that is when Frank DeLeo or Skip Pope would go over to BOA and Rodney Jones wouldn't play their record, because he says when the guy go down to WLS, they won't play their record down there, so get somebody black to play to come over here. So when I was dead, that we had a sales manager named Tom Potter. I said, well, Tom, I know all of these guys from working down at United. So why don't you let me put some records in my back, and then on passing by, I can stop by there and see if I can get them to play it. And the very first record that I got them to play was Everybody Plays the Fool Sometime.
Yeah.
And that was another one. We sold 10,000, 15,000 records in 1 week. Now, I'm going, Cincinnati calls and says, hey, we need somebody to come down here and help us. So then I got to go down to Cincinnati on Tuesday and try to do the sales the rest of the week. And now the sales manager here said, wait a minute now, y'all are taking him away from us. But I says, all I want to do is work, man. Said, what do you want, sales or promotion? I says, all I want to do is a job. But the president, Ken Glancy, said, no, you've got to make up your mind whether you want to do the sale or the promotion. And they were calling, the sales department was calling me at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the promotion department was calling me at 8 o'clock in the morning, want me to come over on that side. So the what made me go with the promotion department, like I said, the sales department was right around here in the city. The promotion department, he was flying to California.
Yeah.
You had an unlimited expense account. You had all kind of credit cards. You went to all of the conventions, all of the meetings. So I figured, well, I think that's where I want to go.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Then I left the sales department and went over in the promotion department.
And you were 1974 Regional R&B Promotion Manager of the Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, they gave you that award at
Madden 75. I had a good year that year.
Yeah, it was great. And that was a great little... Well, those conventions back then were so wonderful. And the NARA conventions and all that is just a fun time. All right, Johnny from Austin wants to say hello. Johnny, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Leroy, it's great to talk to you. I was a program director of a FM radio station in 1969 in Houston, Texas called KRBE. It was before FM really came of age, but we were the first station in Houston when I was PD there to play the Oh Happy Day by the Edwin Hawkins Singers, a record promo man by the name of Al Mathias out of Dallas. Brought a stack of records in one day, including that and Color Him Father by the Winstons, and we added those songs.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't, I never got a gold record for it, but it would have made it anyway, but I'm proud to say we were the first station in Houston, Texas to play Color Him Father and Oh Happy Day.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I know Johnny. Johnny also worked at KYOK in Houston, Leroy, and it was so funny because they'd have like group pictures, and here's Johnny, this blonde-haired kid with blue eyes, and here's everybody else on KYOK, and it's like, who doesn't belong here?
Yeah,
exactly.
Leroy, did you know any of the jocks or Boogaloo George or Rick Roberts at KYOK?
Well, I knew Rick Roberts, and then I met him at a master convention.
Yes, indeed, absolutely. And by the way, when you were with RCA, there was a song that we played on KYLK. It never charted nationally. It was called Strip Me Naked by a group called Love, Peace, and Happiness or something. Do you recall that song?
I do.
Yeah, we played that.
That came out along with the another one around the same time. That was a group called Faith, Hope, and Charity. It came out around the same time that Love, Peace, and Happiness came out. Yeah, I remember that.
Yes.
It never did do anything, but I remember it.
Well, we tried to make it happen. It just didn't. Yeah. And also, wasn't there the Nightlighters at that time with KG?
Oh, yeah, that was a great record. Do you remember that one, Leroy?
Yeah.
The Nightlighters?
Yeah, KG, it was an instrumental. It was terrific.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was hot.
And you'd know it if you heard it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we've run out of time, and I didn't even get to talk about Solar or Dick Griffey or the Whispers, the ladies. Man, we'll have to do this again, Ernie.
Leroy.
Okay, Leroy, and also I want to get Kirkland's number. So, Kirkland, call us back or I'll get it from you, Leroy. And, Johnny, thanks for calling.
I got it. Later.
Okay, good deal. All right, so we'll do it again. Thanks. All right, and I've completely run out of time. We'll do trivia next hour on WGN Radio.